Chapter 49, a chapter in which many tears flow. Christian and Big Tiger had to be shaken before they awoke. Dawn was breaking, the stars were growing pale, and Cao Chang was shouting, "Get up, men!" His brow was clouded and his step was heavy. Christian and Big Tiger looked around. Dan Pignac was sitting beside them. The fire had burned down, but a can of hot tea was standing in the embers. "Drink," said the venerable chief. "There'll be nothing to eat until we get to Falling Wall." Then he bowed to Big Tiger. "Now," he said, "you may give me the ring." Big Tiger drew it from his thumb, raised it to his forehead, and bent his knee. "The holy man Yolros Lama ordered me to give the ring to him who desires it with a great desire." "I have that desire," said Dan Pignac. He knelt down before Big Tiger and received the simple silver ring as if it were a great treasure. Cao Chang, who was bringing the horses, was so alarmed at the sight that he stood stock still. Here was a man whom one had to address as Your Excellency or Your Highness, kneeling before a mere boy. Cao Chang's astonishment grew greater and greater, but he groped in vain for an explanation. Finally, he thought it must be a ceremony foretelling great dangers to be faced. He could hear Big Tiger saying, "Yolros Lama bade you think of him in this hour as of one who has departed from the world." "I am thinking of him," said Dan Pignac. At this, Cao Chang could no longer contain himself. The whole business was too uncanny. He cleared his throat noisily and took a pace forward. "Is it allowed to ask what is to happen next?" he asked timidly. "I told you yesterday, Captain," replied Dan Pignac, "that we would enter Falling Wall at sunrise together. The hour has now come." Cao Chang was gripped with cold fear. "The sun is still behind the mountains," he said. "It will be shining by the time we ride into the gorge." "Ride into it?" cried Cao Chang, petrified. But he pulled himself together and said, "May I ask in what order you wish us to ride so that I can give my men the necessary instructions?" "That is up to you," replied Dan Pignac solemnly. "The first to enter Falling Wall wins the right to the booty, with the exception of the car, which belongs to General Wu." "Is he around here too?" cried Cao Chang, dismayed. "General Wu is not here," Dan Pignac explained, "but his delegates are," and he pointed to Christian and Big Tiger. Cao Chang was too bewildered to understand. "As Your Highness is our guest," he said, "the right of entering Falling Wall first is yours." "Thank you, Captain," said Dan Pignac. When Christian and Big Tiger had drunk a bowl of tea, the party mounted. Cao Chang rode beside Dan Pignac. The others followed, and a soldier led the pack horse behind. The dull gray of early morning lay over the desert. The stones were not yet glittering, and the sand was colorless. When they came to the hill on which Kasim had lain, the gorge opened before them. They could see the brown walls, and as it had got brighter by then, the fresh breaks in the stone face. They also saw the dead donkey. But that was all, for the sloping spurs of Kasim's hill obstructed the view. The party halted, and Cao Chang and several of his men dismounted. The first rays of the sun were touching the steep cliffs of Falling Wall, and the sky was turning a delicate blue. It was a peaceful scene. All waited in silence. At last, Cao Chang suggested it might be time to make their triumphal entry, as he called it. "Wait a minute," said Dan Pignac, pointing to Kasim, who had climbed the hill and was kneeling up there with his feet to the west, saying his morning prayers. When he had finished, he came and asked Dan Pignac whether he might have the honor of entering Falling Wall with him. Cao Chang began to interpret the turkey's words, but Dan Pignac had grasped what he wanted and answered with a friendly nod, saying, "Bolna." "Please do not talk so loud, Your Highness," begged Cao Chang, "or something may happen. But if something does happen," he added proudly, "I shall hasten to your aid." "Thank you, Captain," said Dan Pignac, raising his whip, and the stallion shot off like an arrow. Christian and Big Tiger galloped after, with Kasim between them. The clattering hoofs threw up the stone dust which had gathered in the night. At first they traversed nothing but slopes covered with shattered rock and boulders which had rolled down the mountainside. Then they met the stream which emerged from the valley and trickled through the gravel. There a wall of rock began. It was not quite as high as the walls of Ming Shui, but apparently it was of the same black stone as the mountains in which they had met Dombit. Close to this wall of rock stood the truck. Dampignac held his reins tighter. Cassim, who had his rifle lying across the saddle, slung it over his shoulder, smiled, and pointed down to the driver's cab, in which someone was sitting. When the rider stopped a few yards from the truck, the fellow sounded the horn. The horses rose on their hind legs as if at a word of command, and Moonlight hastily let go of the horn. "Little paw!" cried Dampignac. "Stupid old little paw! So you're here already!" "Your orders were to remain in the gorge until sunrise," replied Moonlight. "And I did so, though I found it hard." He looked inquiringly at Dampignac. "They're dead," said Dampignac, dismounting. "Such was the will of heaven." "I know," said Moonlight, "and I rejoiced in my heart. How is it that I'm sad now?" "Little paw," said Dampignac, "for 20 years we have been under stress. Time softens hatred. Do not bewail its loss. Now let us look at the truck before Cao Cheng arrives." "It stinks," said Moonlight. "All horseless cars stink," said Christian. "Especially when they're full of cans of gasoline," added Big Tiger. "Dombit said the cans were empty when he met Greencoat," Christian recalled. "We'll see," said Big Tiger. He climbed into the truck and tried to lift one can after the other, but they were all too heavy except the one out of which Springtime Snake had filled the tank. "It's not gasoline that's in them," said Big Tiger. "It must be something else." "And the drum?" asked Christian. "It's full," said Big Tiger, "and I believe it's gasoline." He could not open it, for it was standing in the corner. Christian and Big Tiger found a hammer in the toolbox and hammered the bolts out of the rings. The gate board fell down, and then all stood around and gaped, too astonished to say a word. On the floor lay row after row of silver bars, one against the other. Over the first layer, boards had been laid, and on the boards lay more silver bars. It looked like a cargo of small gray bricks. On top of them were more boards, and on the boards stood the cans. Anyone looking at the truck from the outside would have thought Greencoat had only a load of gasoline and nothing else. Cassim drew one of the slender bars from under the boards and examined the stamp. Then he passed it to Dampignac, saying, "There is no God but Allah the Almighty, the Great." At this, Christian and Big Tiger realized there was something special about the silver, and not understanding Cassim's words, they looked inquiringly at Dampignac. "This is the stamp of the old governor in Urumqi," he said. "The silver belongs to him." He pushed the bar back in its place, and Moonlight lifted down one of the cans. When he opened it, there was a slight smell of gasoline, and some liquid ran out. It was only water. But at the bottom of the can lay 8 silver bars. It was the same with all the others, and that was why they were so heavy. All of a sudden, Big Tiger and Christian realized why Greencoat had spent 5 days in Falling Wall, and various other things became clear to them, too. "We shall call Cao Cheng," said Dampignac. Cassim rode off to fetch him, and when they were alone, Moonlight said, "Shong Ma murdered a whole caravan to get this silver, but I can't understand why he didn't move it away from here sooner. 10 years is a long time." "It is easy to understand," Big Tiger explained. "It couldn't be done with a camel caravan. There'd be too many other people knowing about it. So he left the silver lying in the cave, possibly in a side passage covered over with sand and stones. It was safe lying there, and the jewel casket too, because naturally everybody was afraid to go near Falling Wall anymore." "Greencoat took his time," said Christian. "He waited for an opportunity, and when he met good fortune in Hui La Sien, he thought this was his chance. From the outset, he wanted to get the truck from Good Fortune. But Good Fortune withstood the temptation, asserted Big Tiger. I don't believe it, said Moonlight. Christian and Big Tiger contradicted him vehemently. They wanted to help Good Fortune to recover face, and they praised his honesty. It couldn't be helped, they said. If Greencoat wanted the truck, he had to steal it. So that's what he did. Good Fortune is a model of honesty. I see the time coming, said Moonlight with a grin, when Redbeards will die out. It can't be far off when they're becoming converted to virtue at this rate. He glanced at Dompignac to see what he would say, but Dompignac was looking at the wall of rock where the new rubble had fallen on the old, blocking the cave with a whole mountain of boulders. Cao Cheng is coming, said Christian. The frontier captain and his men were riding cautiously into the valley in single file, all eyes on the newly collapsed wall where the falls had left big, bright, yellow patches. They were expecting a fresh landslide at any moment. Cao Cheng put his best foot forward. Peace and order are restored, he cried, and I hear there is vast booty. How fortunate, he continued with a smile, that the thieves have spared us the trouble of loading. Never was there such a victory. We must discuss the matter, replied Dompignac, and he asked Cao Cheng and his men to sit down in a circle around him. As we were the first, he began, to enter Falling Wall, and Cassim, Cao Cheng reminded him, and Cassim, Dompignac agreed, we have won the right to distribute the booty. The criminals lie dead under the rocks, and there's nothing of theirs left but the saddle and bridle of the ass. These we award to Cassim. But all the silver, asked Cao Cheng, taken aback, what about it? It will be returned to its lawful owner, replied Dompignac, for we are in his province, in which the laws of the wise old men prevail. It is your responsibility, Captain, to see that not one silver bar goes astray. As for us, Moonlight and I come from the country in which our laws are valid. One of these laws says, what a gentleman of the mountains lays his hand on is his. Therefore, the can containing the 8 silver bars, which Moonlight took down from the truck, is our property and at our disposal. Does this division seem just to you, Captain? It is just, said Cao Cheng, deeply disappointed. Your deeds will bring you recognition and renown, said Dompignac reassuringly, but for the present, be content with a trifle. We command that the 8 silver bars be distributed. Each of your men shall receive 1. You, as their leader, shall receive 2, and you shall send 1 of your men to Tsing Tsing Si with the pack horse to buy with the last one all the food and drink for a merry feast. At these words, Cao Cheng's dejected face brightened instantly. Thanks 10,000 times for your vast generosity, he cried enthusiastically. In all our miserable life, we have never had such luck. He bowed deeply, then each of his men came and kowtowed before Dompignac, giving thanks for the gifts which Moonlight handed out. Now let us eat what we've got, said Dompignac. Cao Cheng's men unloaded the pack horse and made a fire by the side of the stream. Christian and Big Tiger went to gather wood. Behind the sandbank where the dead ass lay, there was lots of firewood, and Moonlight went with them to show the way. Tell me how it all went in the night, he asked the boys eagerly. I saw a lot, but not all, for I was far away. So Christian told him all he knew, and Big Tiger added what Christian forgot. But the thing which Shong Ma gave Springtime Snake, asked Moonlight, what was it? Unfortunately, said Big Tiger, we know nothing about that. Springtime Snake is dead, said Christian. So we can't ask him what he said thanks 10,000 times for. They collected the firewood, and on their way back, as they passed the spot where the dead ass lay, Christian saw a round object shining in the gray gravel. He picked it up, It was a silver box with a beautifully engraved cover. "Here's the thing," he said, "and it's silver." They all looked at the little box, and Christian tried to lift the cover, but it would not come off. "That's not a box you can open," said Moonlight in a melancholy voice. Then Christian and Big Tiger noticed that the sides were divided into 6 compartments, and between them were 6 other divisions which moved to and fro, but only a little way. The animals representing the months were engraved on the 12 divisions. "It's a toy," said Moonlight, "to teach Mongol children the cycle of the year, and it belonged to the venerable chief. When he was a little child, I was a little child too, and we played with it, naming the months of the year. When his little son was 4 years old, he gave it to him, and then came the murderer, Xiong Ma." Christian stood, holding the silver toy, and Big Tiger stood beside him. Both looked up at Moonlight, their eyes asking what they were to do with it. But Moonlight was at a loss, too. "Give it to Dampignac," he said at last, turning away. "Let's put it into the casket when no one is looking," suggested Big Tiger. "You must do it soon," said Moonlight, "for the prince and I are going back after breakfast." "And what about us?" asked Big Tiger, dismayed. "You shall remain with the truck until good fortune comes. He'll be with you in 3 days." "Will you permit us the joy of seeing you again?" asked Big Tiger. "We beg you to do so," said Christian. "My children, don't make it too hard for me," Moonlight begged them, looking a picture of grief. They found the whole company gathered round the fire, everyone talking at the same time. The kettle was boiling, the tea was bubbling, and Big Tiger fetched his saddlebag and turned out the contents. Christian also opened his, and when nobody was looking, he pushed back the slide cover of the casket and laid the silver toy in between the golden bracelets and hair ornaments. Cao Chang's provisions included samba, salted vegetables, and bean noodles. Breakfast was hardly over when he began talking about supper. But then something suddenly occurred to him. "Who?" he shouted. "Saddle your horse." "What is he to do?" asked Moonlight. "He's to ride off at once," said Cao Chang. "It's very urgent." "In hurry there is error," said Moonlight. "The horses must be fed." "But the telegram," cried Cao Chang. "I must send a telegram." "What do you want to write in the telegram?" inquired Moonlight. Cao Chang made a sweeping gesture. "Everything," he said loftily. "You can't do that," said Moonlight. "A telegram should have only 10 words. Do you have paper?" "What for?" asked Cao Chang, discomfited. "For writing," said Moonlight. "I'm not keen on writing." "It's a slow business," replied Cao Chang. "I tell Hu what is to be written, and he memorizes it. The clerks in Tsing Tsing Ha do the rest. That's their business." Christian fetched his briefcase. "Captain," he said, "words can get lost, and then suddenly half the telegram is missing. Big Tiger is a scribe of distinction. From all the words that there are, he'll pick out 10 which will tell the old governor all he must know." "But you must not forget anything," warned Cao Chang. "No fear," said Christian. "Don't you see? Big Tiger is thinking it up already." "Be quiet, men," ordered Cao Chang, and all looked on as Big Tiger wrote, and they marveled at the speed with which he could complete such a difficult thing as a telegram. "Exactly 10 words," said Big Tiger. "Please read it aloud," said Cao Chang. "You know I've got weak eyes." Big Tiger cleared his throat a little and read. "Compass Mountain Big Tiger and lost silver treasure found. Arrival mid-month, Cao Chang." "I've counted with him," cried Moonlight. "Never have I heard of a telegram which embraced the 100 scenes of an event in 10 words as this one does." But what if you arrive before that time? Cao Cheng objected. All the better, said Moonlight. Then the old governor will have a pleasant surprise. I doubt if he likes surprises, said Cao Cheng dubiously. Remember, he's an old man. The banquet wouldn't be ready, and the flags wouldn't be out. Don't you worry about that, Dumping Yak broke in. The old governor won't be taken by surprise. He'll instruct all the stations on the way to notify him when Compass Mountain and Big Tiger arrive and when they leave. In his province, the front wheel of a car never gets loose without the back one knowing it. The prince is right, cried Cao Cheng enthusiastically. The old governor's domain is a model, so to speak. At that moment, a lump of rock broke loose from the rock face opposite and crashed down. Cao Cheng jumped with terror. Did I speak too loudly? He whispered. You roared like an ox, said Moonlight. Beware, last night I listened to bones cracking. How ghastly, said Cao Cheng. You saw and heard little of last night's doings, continued Moonlight. Let me tell you so you'll know. First came a wind which singed the mountains and blew my hat off. Then, thinking he was well launched, he took his pipe out of his boot. But Dumping Yak interrupted him. Little paw, he said, this isn't the right time for your story. We're leaving. Already? Cried Cao Cheng, taken aback. I had hoped your highness would grace our feast with your presence. Moonlight put back his pipe. Captain Cao Cheng, he said, the next time we meet on the frontier, I'll tell you the rest. It does not have to be now, for such stories become more varied in their incidents and more magnificent in their events as time goes on. They become continually better worth telling, so to speak, agreed Cao Cheng. Well said, cried Moonlight. We understand one another. He stood up and went to the horses. Cao Cheng and his men helped him to saddle, and Christian and Big Tiger went up to Dumping Yak. Please, may we accompany you a bit of the way, said Christian. We beg you to grant us this honor, pleaded Big Tiger. Ride with us to the place where we began the ascent of the mountain yesterday, said Dumping Yak. There we shall say farewell. We thank you, said Christian and Big Tiger, hurrying to the horses. The story of our deed will be told in every tent, cried Cao Cheng, as Dumping Yak mounted his horse. The men gathered round, and each expressed his modest wish for a good journey. I forgot to tell your highness, cried Cao Cheng, that there is a government paper printed in the capital. In a few weeks, the educated people of all nations will learn of the magnificent victory of justice over crime at Falling Wall. Send us a copy, said Moonlight, laughing. Farewell, captain, cried Dumping Yak. Then they trotted down toward the narrow defile in which Moonlight had spent the night. Here, too, were old willow trees, and their shoots surrounded the place at which the stream broke with a slight ripple through the gravel. The smell of damp earth and wet stone brought a waft of memory of the distant world in which there were animals and plants. They dismounted and led the horses over the loose stones into the gorge. It was as Cao Cheng had said. One could touch the opposite walls with one's outstretched arms, and the path led abruptly upward. It was difficult going. The horses stumbled, and one could see that it could not have been easy even for a camel caravan to get through here. But camels walk calmly and carefully, and the path promised safety. It led northward to where the desert comes to an end, heaven knows where. There would be grass again, and trees, tents, and white monasteries, and at the end of the path, big towns, Ulyasutai, and still farther on, Kobdo. One had but to follow the trail to get there. It took only about 10 minutes to squeeze through the narrow bottleneck, and the blue sky grew nearer. The path turned sharply eastward, and they were able to mount again. Soon they reached the place where Moonlight had dismounted the previous afternoon, and from there to the place of parting was only another li. Dumping Yak pulled up, and they all dismounted. Heaven only knows, said the venerable chief, if our ways shall ever meet again. If heaven is kind to me, you shall one day see the robber prince, Dampignac, again, but in another role. He embraced Christian and Big Tiger. When moonlight bent down to them, his face was wet with tears. "Please, please do not weep," begged Christian. "If you do, I shall have to howl out loud." He looked at Big Tiger and saw that his eyes, too, were full of tears. Big Tiger had become very fond of moonlight. For a while, the venerable chief looked out over the deeply fissured plateau as if there was something to see. Then he mounted. Moonlight took Christian's and Big Tiger's horses, tied the reins together, and lifted down the leather bag in which the casket was. "This bag will come back to you refilled in 3 days," he promised. Christian went up to Dampignac and said, "We have forgotten something, and I must say it before it is too late. The Mongol Naidan of the Torgut tribe, who is called Picture Sheet, salutes on bended knee. Will the venerable chief," he said, "kindly send the silver boxes direct to Naidan, who lives at the Narin Gol, instead of by the old Marin?" "That has been done," replied Dampignac, smiling. "Naidan has got his money." He raised his whip in greeting. Big Tiger and Christian shouted, "Seya bona," and they kept on shouting it until they could see nothing but a cloud of dust. Then they were alone in the vast stony desert under the blue cloudless sky. Christian wanted to say something, but as he had wept more than Big Tiger, he resolved not to be the first to speak. So they sat in silence by the wayside. "I wish good fortune was here," said Big Tiger finally. "Or at least the dog," said Christian. They stood up and began to walk back. At each step, they had to lift their heavy riding boots with conscious effort. Otherwise, they would have only slouched along. Down the defile, the going was easier. The boots slid almost of themselves over the round, loose stones. When the rocks separated and the air, cooled by water, was wafted towards them, they could see the truck through the branches of the willows. But the horses were gone, and there was only one man sitting by the dying father. "Kasim," said Christian. "But where are the others and the horses?" asked Big Tiger. "Cao Cheng was frightened of this uncanny place," Christian surmised. "He's gone back to his old camp." "Cao Cheng is afraid he'd see the pole star at midday," said Big Tiger. "He lacks courage." "You can't blame him," said Christian. "Falling Wall is no good place." Kasim came to meet them. He was cheery and spoke gentle, kindly-sounding words in his own language. But it was only when he tried the language of signs that they understood him. Their guess proved right. Cao Cheng had returned to his old camp behind the mountain, but Kasim remained with them.